We're glad you're joining us here at NRCC Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts.
Our current lesson is titled, How to Change the World. Trying to figure out how to get it all in before September 15th when we start talking about rethinking sex education. But the lesson's in three parts. Part one, how to change the world, change yourself, change your brain. We talked about brain tricks. Part two, how to change the world, change your relationships. In other words, a bigger version of we. That's the part we're looking at right now. And part three is change your relationship to power, because it turns out that power's got a bad name. But without power, you can't change things. And so we have to think about, how does power work in a way that's, we've often thought of power as dominating somebody else. That's not the way Jesus taught it. Jesus taught about power with, not power over. And so how do we develop power with, so that we can actually go about changing things in our city? That's the three parts of the lesson. Now, the early parts of the lesson were heavy on brain science, brain tricks that get in the way when we try to make a difference in the world. Because there are default settings in our heads that are instinctive and reactionary, the ways that we deal with the world, that if we don't deal with those patterns, will waylay us. And they will hamstring us, and they will keep us from following Jesus into making a difference in the world. In the War of 1812, this guy, a naval officer, Oliver Perry, became famous for defeating the British at the Battle of Lake Erie. Not many people know much about the War of 1812. It's not one of our biggies in history class, but you might know about this guy because you heard about a quote that was one of his quotes that was taught to our school children for years and years and years, because it captured a moment in our nation's history. And the quote is, "We have met the enemy, and they are ours." It became well known because the War of 1812 catapulted America onto the national or the global stage. That was when we became an international power. School kids were taught that quote because it embodied this moment in which America was being catapulted into a new way of thinking about ourselves. And so that quote became very well known. We have met the enemy, and they are ours. And then in the 1960s, the Vietnam War happened, and then a Watergate happened. And that was a season in which we, as Americans, began doubting ourselves. And we began to question our own place in the world, questioning our status, questioning our own ethos. Are we really the shining city on a hill that we think we are? And so there was a famous comic strip back in the 60s. You might be old enough to remember. The comic strip was called Pogo. And Pogo recaptured Perry's quote and tweaked it a little bit to capture that moment in our national history. And he said, "We have met the enemy, and he is us." In other words, when we look within, we realize that our troubles are often more inside of us than they are outside of us. Rather than meeting the external enemy and vanquishing the enemy and that solving our problems, we have to look within to vanquish our adversaries as a way to solve our problems. Well, that's why we spent as much time as we did looking at our brain tricks. We're looking at the enemy inside more than the enemy outside. And when I talk about brain tricks, that's what we're talking about, the interior enemy, the hindrance that is set before us in changing the world that comes from within. Now, there's a term you might have heard. The term is biological determinism, or just determinism. It says this: as scientists, we need to take seriously this whole human reality of brain tricks. In other words, there are mechanics to the how and the why of us doing what we do, thinking what we think, feeling what we feel.
And the thing is, that word determinism feels like it doesn't work because somehow it's been determined for us what we're going to do. But if you are watchful and careful, you realize that in the right setting, it is almost predetermined that you're going to act this way, that you're going to feel this way, that you're going to think these kinds of thoughts. And it all follows a very predictable set of processes and a very predictable set of patterns. And if you don't know that enemy that lives between our ears, then we are not forewarned and we are not forearmed to be able to do anything different than those patterns that are determined for us. We have to know our enemy within. When we set out to make a difference in the world, all of those interior patterns get triggered all the time. And when that happens, it is very easy, it is very predetermined that we are going to listen to Perry and we're not going to listen to Pogo. The enemy in that instance is always projected outside of ourselves. That's the bad guy. And the other people and the other groups, they become the ones that we rail against. And so it is just programmed into our heads that we're going to default to this, to say that we are right and we have it right. And our external enemies, those ones out there, all we have to do is vanquish them and we will solve our troubles. Which can be true because there are bad actors doing bad things in the world. But the wisdom of self-reflection is that more often than not, it is our own brain tricks that are causing most of our pain. It is our own brain tricks that are doing most to break the world. And if all we do is focus on the enemy outside, it will blind us to the enemy within, and we will not be effective in making the changes that we want to see in our world. Now, if you would like to read a book that kind of talks about how religion and the sciences are converging right now, this is a good one. This one talks about how evolutionary psychology converges and gives us a sense of how spirituality and this thing of determinism works in our heads. Now, if you do get the book, be sure to read the whole thing, because if you only read three quarters of it, you're going to walk away thinking, oh my God, we're just robots. There's nothing else. We don't have any choice at all. It's all predetermined for us. So you have to read the last quarter of the book so that you don't think that you're just a slave to your chemicals, you're just a slave to your electrical impulses. But if you read the whole book, it's a good book. If you only read three quarters of it, yeah, you're screwed. So now, it wasn't until relatively late in our Judeo-Christian tradition that we began resisting this idea. And I'm going to say the words, and you watch if you don't see some resistance come up inside. It wasn't until late in our tradition that we began to resist the notion that we are, get ready, animals. We began to resist that notion after our Hebrew heritage. We begin to resist that notion after Jesus. We begin to resist that notion after Paul. It wasn't until we moved west and we adopted the worldview of the Greeks, and in particular the worldview of Plato, that we got the idea in our heads that it was bad to be of the earth, that it was bad to be made of the same stuff that animals are made of, that it was bad to have animal brains and to have animal bodies and to have animal chemicals and to have animal instincts. And so the notion caught on that we are not animals, and it caught on with a vengeance in the 4th and the 5th centuries, kind of reached its height in Victorian England and Western civilization, Western society. And it seemed that if we were to acknowledge that there is animalness within us, it would be a betrayal of our Western values, and in particular, it would be a betrayal of Western Christianity. So we focused on the special part of us, the set-apart part of us, the different from the animals part of us, and we focused on that to the exclusion of the fact that we have these bodies that do what the animals' bodies do. So A large part of our spirituality has been recovering a more balanced understanding of our own humanity. Because if we don't do that, we will continue to suffer some pretty significant blind spots because we are, in many ways, animal beings. And it doesn't matter how sincerely we believe that we are not. If it is so, when we act as though it is not so, that's only going to create trouble. And the brain tricks part of this lesson has been a foundation to say, yeah, that's going on. And you have to know that's going on because that is your adversary. Yes, we are animals. And our brains follow very predictable patterns, the same kind of patterns that animal brains follow. And we do have fight, flight, or freeze. We have that inside of us. And we do have outgrouping and ingrouping and categorizing. That is in us. And we do have the tools, the instincts to keep the dangerous outsider dangerous and outside. And if we don't factor that in, only trouble. But our tradition also insists that we are also more than our brain tricks. We are more than our animal instincts. One way we've talked about it as a community is we've said we are made out of stardust and we are made out of God dust. 14 million years ago, a big bang exploded the universe that we live in, and plasma formed stars, and stars began to spit out salts and gases and metals, and eventually began to spit out carbon, and that became our bodies, and it became our nerves, and it became our brains. We are made of stardust. Eventually, stardust reached a degree of complexity that allowed us to experience conscious awareness and imagination and a sense of self that we can actually call me. We are made out of stardust. And it was an iterative process over a long, long time, but we, you and I, were shaped by the same processes that shaped dolphins and Clydesdales and bonobos. We are made out of stardust. And one of the features of creatures made of stardust, brain tricks. They are wired into our heads. Thinking and feeling and acting algorithms that help us survive and pass along our genes. And they helped us in the context that we spent most of our history in, small bands of hunters and gatherers. We are made out of stardust, and we carry inside of us all the assets and all of the liabilities that go with that basic animal reality. But we use a code word to talk about another part of us that is something even deeper than the instinct part that we carry in our brains, deeper than stardust. And the code word that we use for that, we say, is God. Now, I say code word because our tradition insists that when we use that word, we cannot contain the depth of reality that we are talking about. We can't contain the concept of God. God won't fit into thoughts that we think. The deeper reality won't fit into the construct that we create of a human-shaped being who lives in the heavens. It's a deeper reality, our ancient wisdom insists. It is a more profound reality than can be contained. So we use the code word God to point us in that direction. But whatever that is, that deeper reality that we use God to describe, it's in us. Our tradition insists. So we say, yes, we are made of stardust, but we are also made of divine dust. We are made of God dust. There is more to us than the deterministic brain tricks that are so powerful in our brains. And when we access that deeper part of us by terms in history called the Holy Spirit or the inner divine or the true self, accessing that deeper part of us, our tradition says from experience, is both possible and necessary if we want to participate in changing the world. So many of our ancient forebears, they accessed this deeper reality, they experienced this deeper reality, and they wrote back to us with words like,
the indwelling Holy Spirit, or the inner presence of God, or the Spirit of Jesus, or in Genesis, the likeness of God. Paul used that same term, the likeness of God. An essential part of us that is as intrinsic to our being as the animal part of us. This made of the same stuff God is made of, part of us, it is essential that we tap into that for sustained long-term commitment to making a difference in the world, healing the harm that has happened in the world, building a bigger version of we so we can make a difference in the world. But accessing that deeper part of us, it's not the falling off a log part of being human. The falling off a log part of being human is the animal instinct part of being human. The more demanding, the more rigorous part, the more exalted part of being human is more challenging. It is more difficult, which is why our whole tradition grew up around the idea that it is possible to access this deeper part of who we are, and we together can walk a spiritual journey undertaken together that will help us help one another access this deeper part of us, because it is challenging. So we can, in a sustainable way, make a difference in the world by gathering together to strengthen one another in the pursuit of and the access of this indwelling divine life. It is that part of us, the inner divine, that helps us access the bedrock principles on which change are founded. And it turns out, Jesus talked about those bedrock principles. Love is an essential part of changing the world. Forgiveness is an essential part of changing the world. Building the strength of relationship, essential part of bringing change to the world. And it is that interior divine capacity that allows us to not be limited by the triggering instincts in our head that keep the outsider outside and keep us contained in our inner groups. Brain tricks, however, are easy. They're instinctive in an animal kind of way. G.K. Chesterton was a British poet and a philosopher and, you know, kind of a part-time theologian back in the 1800s. And he said this quote, and I've used it several times, "Christianity has not been tried and found wanting. Christianity has been tried and found difficult. And as a consequence, it has rarely been truly tried." In other words, this thing is tough. Accessing the inner divine, it is, as Jesus described, a narrow path, demanding, uphill, challenging. And so, it is particularly difficult to build a bigger version of we, because all the while that we are trying to do that, we have these brain tricks screaming at us, saying, the other is the enemy. We are the righteous ones, and we are the right ones. They are the evil ones, and they are the wrong ones. And that's just going on as soon as we find ourselves in conflict. It's a brain trick. And while that's screaming at us, it becomes very challenging to build a bigger version of we. But our tradition teaches us to be very suspect of our own righteousness. And our tradition teaches us to be equally suspect of our adversary's evilness. Because our tradition understood brain tricks are not the final word. Just because that's where our heads go, and it feels so real, and it feels so true, does not mean it is true. And our tradition gives us a whole toolbox of practical ways to assist us. In one of his early sermons, about every 3 or 4 years, I listened to the collected sermons and speeches of Martin Luther King. One of his early ones, I think it was early 60s, the title of the sermon was Loving the Enemy. And he didn't use the word brain tricks, but he was speaking of that same dynamic this way. He said, if we're going to do this thing Jesus called us to do, if we're going to love our enemies, or to use what we're talking about in this lesson, if we're going to build a bigger version of we, then we're going to have to train ourselves to look for the good in our adversary and look for the blind spots in ourselves. So now remember what we learned when we were looking at that section on the brain tricks. That's exactly the opposite of what our brain tricks tell us to do. Our brain tricks streamline and simplify seeing the blind spot in the enemy and streamline and simplify how easy it is for us to see the good in ourselves. So if we're going to walk this pathway, our tradition tells us, we're going to have to go exactly opposite to what these brain tricks tell us to do. Look for the good in the adversary and be very suspicious of the blind spots in ourselves. That's what Paul said. He used different language, but he said it this way. The things that I don't want to do, that's what I end up doing. The things that I want to do, that's the stuff I don't end up doing. My brain tricks get in the way. Again, stardust and divine dust. And if we have both of those in us, here's a really uncomfortable truth. Our adversary also has both of those in him or in her. Stardust, when we look at the adversary, easy to see. Divine dust, when we look at the adversary, not so easy to see, but it is in us. And here's what Jesus said, it is to us to call that divine dust forth in our adversary. That's what he means when he's talking about love your neighbor as you love yourself. Even love your enemy. Draw forth that which is of the divine in the adversary. But here's the thing. Our brain tricks are given this constant drumbeat. Externalize the enemy. Make the enemy out there. And then our tradition comes back and says, no, you have the divine within you that allows you to be able to look within and love the adversary. The tradition insists brain tricks are not the final word. There is a deeper reality. And when we access that deeper reality, it changes the game. The reality inside of us opens up possibilities we cannot see until we access it. When we access divine dust, it changes everything. We see what we hadn't seen. We feel what we hadn't felt. And we are able to act in ways that we could not have acted. We are able to move into a reality in which the other is us, in which oneness is a better description of reality than two-ness. That makes it possible for adversaries to become allies and for outsiders to become insiders. And divine dust is in you. The capacity to rise above brain tricks is in you. The capacity to access the divine center self or the transcendent self or the spirit self. Generation after generation, those who have gone before us have done it and have given us a roadmap so that we know how to do it. And when we do, it changes everything. Brain tricks are not the final word. Brain tricks are powerful, but they are not the deepest deep. Brain tricks are powerful, instinctive, but they are not the truest true. So we take up the practices. We take up the practices that help us help one another access the interior divine. We go to meditation groups so that we are steadfast in our meditative practices because that's how we access the deeper deep. That's how we draw from this other part of us, this divine dust part of us. And then we get ourselves out there and we learn how to build bigger versions of us. We get coffee with the conservative shaming liberal or the angry Trump voter or the gay person or the homophobic person. And we get a hint of what Jesus was talking about, finding the good in the other, what Martin Luther King developed in a sermon, find the good in the adversary. And then we start constructing our own bigger version of we. And then we see what happens. And we watch what kind of change develops in that context. So while I was gone, I got a message, and I just saw it yesterday. And this person would self-identify as a liberal. And this person would, I'm not going to tell you if it's a he or a she, but it's really inconvenient to telling a story to say he and she, or so I'm just going to pick one, and I chose she in my notes. But that doesn't mean she is a she. She is liberal by politics and by personality an Enneagram 2. And if you've been studying the Enneagram, what you know that that means is that she is super compassionate toward other people and consequently deeply moved by this family separation thing that is happening in our immigration policy and deeply moved by the mass shootings that have been seeming to accelerate in our national life. And she's been listening to these lessons and has been working on a bigger version of we. And she has a relationship with one person in her life that is particularly pro-gun and super supportive of current immigration policies. And for her, this person embodies the other, the one that is different from her. And so she's done coffee with this person and started listening to understand with this person. And her note said, I hadn't actually seen this before, but there is something bigger than our ideological differences. There is something bigger than our social differences. At first, she said, this person was reluctant to talk, but as I've been listening and trying to understand, now we actually talk. And sure enough, I have been able to see that there is good in this person. Man, we really disagree on these issues, but there is good in this person. And actually what has happened over time is we've come to actually respect one another and to develop affection for one another and have able to find a little bit of common ground. Not much, but a little bit of common ground. Enough so that we can actually talk about some of these divisive issues. And on a couple of things, we've actually come to agree. Not on everything, but on two things. And one, we both agree our nation needs an effective immigration policy because we're not what we're doing now, not very effective. And whatever that policy becomes, it should not include separating families. No matter what, that shouldn't be part of what. Doesn't matter when it started. Doesn't matter if it started under Obama or if it started under Trump. Doesn't matter. All that stuff doesn't matter. That shouldn't be part of what we do. We also agree that if we were put in similar circumstances, that might be us bringing our families here illegally. And she said, that's all we could agree on. That was it. But, she said, that's no small thing, because now we can actually work together on those things, and we can write to our senators, and we can talk about family separation being part of whatever the immigration policy is, and we can begin to ask for an immigration policy that factors in the desperate journeys that people are taking and the causes that are driving them and not separating children. That is no small thing that we can together agree on, work on, and 6 months ago, she said, I couldn't talk about that with her, with him. He didn't stop being pro-gun. I didn't stop being anti-gun. She didn't stop being hardline law and order, and I didn't stop prioritizing compassion over law and order. Those things never changed. But there is good in this person, and I've seen it. This person is not evil. We even have our own little bit of a bigger version of we. This person is not my enemy. My brain tricks sure made her out to be my enemy. But this person is not my enemy. And now I'm thinking, maybe I could do this in expanding circles. Having done this once, maybe I could have coffee with a white supremacist. Or maybe I could have coffee with a Christian that believes that gay people or trans people are abominations. They would be difficult conversations for me. Remember, she's a self-reported liberal. But maybe I can find the good in others and share some common ground and some shared humanity. And maybe we'd be better situated to work together to make a difference. Maybe we'd be better situated to have a larger version of we. Well, I got to tell you, that was kind of an encouraging way to come back from vacation. I thought, well, now that's good. I don't know what y'all did while I was gone, but that's good. So indwelling spirit, may we access the deeper deep, the inner divine. May we do so in ways that equip us to make a difference in the world. May we in our spiritual practices be about the business of religion, encouraging one another to access that which is within us that gives us the capacity to bring transformation into our worlds. As we follow Jesus, amen.
If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, NorthRaleighCommunityChurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page on your computer's browser, at the bottom on your phone's browser. Thank you.